How can we better serve the health needs of older adults if another crisis like Superstorm Sandy happens? How can the community, emergency workers, and policymakers ensure that everything, from basic nutrition to prescription medicine to health services for chronically ill seniors, are accessed quickly, appropriately, and locally? These are some of the questions the New York Academy of Medicine explored in their latest report, Resilient Communities: Empowering Older Adults in Disasters and Daily Life. The report looked at previous research, used data collected immediately after Sandy, and analyzed interviews with residents, experts, and community leaders to come up with recommendations on disaster preparedness for seniors.
As you would expect, we found a lot about the vulnerabilities that older people have, including things like mobility impairment, chronic health conditions, a predisposition to cognitive impairment, as well as factors such as social isolation and financial limitations. Following our review of existing data, we went out into the communities hardest hit by Sandy to hear directly from those who had been affected. We interviewed about 200 people, and those interviews included 55 experts from fields ranging from healthcare to technology to emergency management. We spoke to 81 older adults. These were people 60 and over who had been directly affected by the storm. And we spoke to 57 frontline responders. These were people who were integral to helping meet the needs of older people before, during, and after the storm, but were outside the traditional emergency management sector. So I'm talking about social workers, pharmacists, building service workers, home health aides, and volunteers. We worked closely with community-based organizations to help us identify interviewees, and we spoke to people in English, Mandarin, and Spanish.
That's Lindsay Goldman, project manager at the New York Academy of Medicine and the lead author of the report. She described the most important lessons learned.
There are three key takeaways that are pervasive throughout. First, older people should be consulted on all aspects of emergency planning, response, and recovery. Second, we need to better understand and strengthen community preparedness in addition to individual preparedness. And third, we need policies that support the community in meeting the needs of older people by recognizing the services and systems they rely on. Older adults who had more connections with individuals and institutions within their communities were more likely to report having had their needs met, whereas older people with fewer connections or older people who became separated from their networks due to disruptions in communication or transportation, said that they felt abandoned, and they were more likely to have struggled for an extended period with unmet basic and healthcare needs.
Goldman says that part of the challenge is actually finding older people in need of assistance during a crisis.
And it was also very difficult for these people to maintain awareness of what was going on. This was especially true within non-English-speaking populations, such as the Chinese-speaking community on the Lower East Side and the Russian-speaking community in Coney Island. It was very difficult for responders to find older people who couldn't reach out for help themselves after Sandy, and that's because the majority don't appear on any kind of special needs list. Under routine conditions, most older people, despite having multiple chronic healthcare conditions, generally operate fine. They don't require services. They're not connected to resources. With electricity and elevator service, everything is fine. But once the power is out, they become vulnerable.
She said that building owners need to be more aware of any residents with special needs, including older people who may need help, or those that don't speak English.
And housing is a particularly critical point of intervention here. Landlords need to know who's in their buildings and how those people may become vulnerable in an emergency. And we have a couple of strategies through which landlords can do this. They can maintain a voluntary registry of tenants' needs and emergency contacts. They can identify building and floor captains who can relay information to tenants on behalf of management and then relay information from tenants back to management in an emergency. It's important for landlords to understand the culture of their buildings and floors. Are these people who are especially tight-knit, and are they likely to be making decisions together as to whether to evacuate or shelter in place? We saw a lot of instances, especially in multifamily housing, high-rises, of people collectively processing the information and deciding they would all stay and they were in this together.
A significant problem many older people encountered was difficulty accessing providers for routine care or services.
Services to assist older people after Sandy were often inaccessible or inappropriate for them. Regarding their basic needs, information, food, and supplies were often distributed in the lobbies of buildings without electricity or through distribution centers that were too difficult for older adults to get to. Shelters were noted as particularly problematic, and in some cases, older people elected to remain in their homes because they felt it was more dangerous to go to the shelter than to remain at home. We need to talk to older people about the emergency shelter system and figure out the best place for them to go if they can't stay with friends or family where they know that their health and safety needs will be met. With respect to healthcare, older people struggle to access medication and outpatient services such as dialysis, and this often led them to the emergency room. When we're in a disaster with limited resources, we really want emergency rooms to be reserved for people who are in need of acute care. Healthcare providers, as well as other providers of essential services to older people, should develop comprehensive contingency plans and discuss them with patients in the context of routine care delivery. Patients need to understand how the conditions resulting from a disaster, whether it be the loss of electricity, the closure of pharmacies, the loss of transportation, can affect their health to make informed decisions.
The report also recommends passage of the Emergency Pharmacy Law, which provides continuity of care management and dispensing protocols. More than half of the other states in the U.S. already have this kind of law.
We also recommend that New York State enact a disaster pharmacy law to guide pharmacists in dispensing medication once a state of emergency has been declared. Florida, Texas, Louisiana, and 30 other states have established these kinds of policies that help to maintain the continuity of medication management for the 80% of older adults who take medication regularly. And home care and hospice providers should be part of cities' emergency plans, and this is actually included in a bill that recently passed the New York State Senate and is now with the Assembly.
The good news is that many older adults were active participants in relief efforts.
Older adults actively supported their communities before, during, and after the storm. And this is consistent with some of the research we found, which suggests that older people may in fact be more resilient than younger people after disasters. And this can be attributed to their increased life experience, which may have a protective function. The average age of older adults we interviewed was 72, and the average age of frontline responders we interviewed was 51, so there wasn't such a big discrepancy. We spoke to responders up to 83 years old who were engaged in the formal and informal response and the recovery effort, despite having chronic health conditions or impairments themselves. Older people assisted with FEMA applications, they staffed call centers, they sorted donations, they used their professional skills, those with careers in construction and carpentry, trained and oversaw teams of volunteers doing demolition and rebuilding. Older people were especially useful in understanding and meeting the needs of other older adults.
Sue Fox, executive director of Brooklyn Shorefront YMYWHA, said that for many seniors, the effects of Sandy still linger.
After the storm, we became a hub for food, water, supplies, and social connections, and we served as a FEMA disaster recovery center for 4.5 months. Sandy, in our world, is not over. It continues to this day. We are disaster case managers, and older people do continue to struggle with rebuild issues, increasing rent, loss of affordable housing, and psychological insecurity and fears that what will we do if this happens again.
Fox said communities need to better prepare and educate residents before the next disaster.
In thinking about how to prepare for future disasters, this report reinforces the need to look at our neighborhood's identity and plan with the community rather than for the community. In the case of Southern Brooklyn, we know we have a very large contingent of frail older people who do not speak English and may not know how or where to access resources and rely oftentimes on social service organizations like the Shorefront Y to get that information. They may be frightened of government, having experienced persecution in their homeland, or may have concerns about their immigration status. It is important that we designate disaster response and recovery hubs prior to a disaster and educate people about what to do and where to go.
I asked Goldman about the public health ramifications created by a shortage of medications and health services.
Can you talk a little bit more about the challenges that older adults had with getting medication? What happened and who helped?
That's a really good question. So medications were lost. In some cases, they were washed away. In some cases, people ran out of their extra supply. Doctors were very difficult to get a hold of because of the disruptions to communication. And as a result, I should also say that I think about 100 pharmacies were closed and had been significantly compromised by the storm. Pharmacies that were open played a critical role in meeting the medication needs of older people. They often went above and beyond in identifying older people who needed refills, or who might need assistance, or who might not have been able to leave their homes. They were delivering, day and night. But I think that the real problem was that New York State issued some temporary guidelines, to guide pharmacists in dispensing medication during the disaster. So whether it was someone came in without a prescription, someone came in with just a bottle, they had these guidelines, except because they disseminated these guidelines right after the storm, there were some real gaps in the dissemination strategy, and a lot of people didn't know how they were supposed to dispense medication in an emergency. So we had a lot of community-based organizations going door-to-door doing canvassing alongside, you know, nurses and healthcare practitioners, finding out what medications people needed, but then going to the pharmacies, and the pharmacies maybe filled the prescription. Maybe you were on one medication and you got one pill, but I was on the same medication and I got 10 pills, all depending on, you know, which pharmacy or which pharmacist you went to. So we really want to encourage New York State to enact a disaster pharmacy law so that pharmacists understand exactly what their protocols are in the case of an emergency. They need to know these things in advance. And that's what a policy does.
New York Academy of Medicine President Joe Ivy Beauford said the emergency pharmacy policies really do make a difference.
One of the things that the report outlines is that 33 states, especially states like Florida and Texas, Louisiana, who are prone to crisis, do in fact have these emergency pharmacy policies, which really give a much more flexibility around the length of prescriptions, ability to deliver prescriptions. The report also talks about really working with local healthcare and social service providers to help them prepare emergency plans for their panels of patients and those they serve. And there's a third area that appeared which could be really helpful, aside from the discussions that Sue and Lindsay mentioned earlier around community service providers really having plans and having knowing who's living in the building and who may need help. There were issues of access to particular zones that were cut off because of risks, and I think there's a notion, and this has been done in a few other places, that first responders, informal first responders, people in home care situations, social service providers, and palliative care providers actually might be given special passes. There might be a contingency plan for them to have passes so they could, in fact, obviously, within the bounds of safety, respond to their clients.
What about setting up the community hubs as distribution points for pharmacies?
The challenge in South Brooklyn after the storm hit was the very pharmacies that had served the tens of thousands of older adults now in crisis because they lost their medications were themselves flooded out. We have much more work to do, but without the legislation in place, the pharmacists and physicians are more at, you know, their hands are tied. But with that, certainly the hubs can make sure that all of the seniors keep a ready list of all the medications that they're on. So when an emergency responder comes to them, they would be able to readily and easily communicate what medications they're on and what the dosage is. And that would be a very important use of that hub. But the distribution of medications itself does require professionals, and we would need to include pharmacists in the planning for those hubs.
With about 1 million older adults currently living in New York, another natural disaster, even if it's not on the scale of Sandy, has serious public health ramifications. Goldman is hopeful that the insight gained from previous disasters spurs more cooperation and planning, so that whenever another crisis hits, our city's seniors will be better served and come through it mentally and physically healthy. For Health Style, I'm Liz Siegert.